Good morning. Good afternoon. Please go ahead. This call is now being recorded.
Thank you very much, Francesca. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the PPSA Working Group call on the 16th of December 2014. On the call today, we have Tatiana Komsova, Val Sherman, Holly Raich, Michaela Nalen, Steve Metalitz, Theo Gertz, Justin Macy, Todd Williams, David Heathley, Alex Deacon, Christian Dawson, Griffin Barnett, Sarah Wild, Darcy Sudwell, Susan Kawaguchi, Phil Corwin, Kathy Kleiman, Oswaldo Navarro, Graham Bunton, James Liddell, Stephanie Perem, and Frank Mischlich. We have apologies from Don Blumenthal, who will hopefully join soon, Richard Leaning, Lindsay Hamilton-Reed, and Marika Koenig. And from staff, we have Mary Wong, Daniela Andela, and myself, Nancy Perrigan. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Graham.
Oh, is it me this morning? Good morning, everyone. Any updates to SOIs? No? Good. Just a reminder maybe to check those out if you haven't looked at yours in a while. Apologies if I sound a little Catherine Turner-esque. I'm rocking quite a cold, and I'm being a sucky baby about it. So today we are going to finalize Category E. We've got some updated draft recommendations here, and then we're going to try and move on to G, skipping F. Sorry, just checking the chat. We've got a couple of questions there from the on the right-hand side. You can see around the Category E, the remaining questions. Actually, before we get into that, does anybody have any comments on the agenda? We're happy to move forward with that. good. I can't seem to scroll in the document. Hey, there we go. So if we scroll down to, where is it? We've got all sorts of comments in there. Mary, which bit is it where it's the should versus must? Did we lose Mary too?
No, I'm here. Sorry. I apologize that both Don and I actually happened to have internet outages and power outages. So like I said, I can't see the Adobe, but if we're looking at the 16th December update, and Graham, do you want it to go to the should and must? That's still in the second bullet point on page 2.
Oh, yeah, there it is. So yeah. Where we're at is this. So... give me one second. I have a large group of people being very loud behind me. Sorry. My apologies. have to shush some people behind me. So second bullet point on page 2, as part of an escalation process and when the above-mentioned requirements concerning a persistent delivery failure of an electronic communication have been met, the provider should or the provider must, upon request, forward a further form of notice to its customer. A provider should have the discretion to select the most appropriate means of forwarding such a request. And then we have the and to charge a reasonable fee on a cost recovery basis. So let's go to that should versus must and see if anybody has any particular comments on that. There we go. Steve, please.
Thank you, Graham. This is Steve. I do support must, but I think... it might make most sense to just to walk through. This is the document that Mary circulated yesterday, I believe. and it might just make sense to walk through this because she's tried to simplify things a little bit and reorganize them in a way that I think is helpful to frame the issues. And then, you know, if we're satisfied with this, then I think the should-must issue becomes simpler to resolve. But basically, she's, and again, this is back on the first, on the second page. I think Graham is the only one who can scroll at this point. At least I can't.
Oh, really? We can, we should. We should. Hey, let's give everybody the ability to scroll. Mary, are you still there? Would you be able to walk us through the changes that you've made here?
Yep, sure. I'm still here. And essentially what we tried to do is to pick up on all the comments that were made on the call last week. And we haven't incorporated all of them in just these two bullet points. You'll see that, for example, in a couple of new footnotes, that tries to clarify what is an electronic communication and to make sure, for example, that when we talk about delivery and the failure of delivery, we're not talking about the failure of a customer to respond. I mean, those seem to us to be not so much recommendations but clarifications, so that's why they went into footnotes. With respect to these particular bullet points on page 2, as Steve mentioned, and I think I said on the call last week, the attempt here is to simplify, make it more straightforward. We still use the terminology here of persistent failure of delivery, and I think Kathy may have just sent an email about, I think, a possible need to get some more refinement of clarity around that. So if she's on the call, I'll let her explain what she has in mind on that. But essentially, the first bullet point from last week, it's pretty much what it used to be, except somewhat rearranged. And it's just said in the affirmative now that there will be promptly forwarded to the customer third-party electronic requests alleging abuse. And if a provider becomes aware of a persistent delivery failure, then that provider will promptly notify the requestor. So it's two sentences that tries to capture where we were on this point last week. And then if we go to the second bullet point, and here's where I think some more changes and rearranging has been done, we have related it back to the persistent delivery failure because there has to be that failure, and then if a provider becomes aware of that, then the provider promptly notifies the requestor, at which point the second bullet point could kick in as part of escalation, in which case then we're talking about forwarding upon request a form of notice with all the other points that are still up for discussion, the cost recovery basis. And the last addition here on the second bullet point is something that we picked up from the call last week again, which is some sort of bracket, if you like, or some sort of limitation over how often this form of escalation can be used. And that could be seen as an ability to minimize costs as well as possible abuse of the system, et cetera, et cetera. Then we added a third bullet point that, again, going back to the persistent delivery failure, that attempts to link us back to recommendations that this group made under Category B, Question 2, which is the obligation of a provider to verify or re-verify, as the case may be, a customer's email address. The logic here being that if you know as a provider that that email address doesn't work, then that should trigger the obligations that we've already talked about in Category B. And the final bullet point that was added here, bullet point number 4, and this was something that was discussed with the chairs on our pre-call today, and this may actually be a bullet point of broader application than just this particular recommendation, but since we're on Category E, we thought it would be useful to put it here, which is that given that providers in their terms of service sometimes do have the ability or do specify that they may take some different or further option, we wanted to make it clear that even with having these recommendations, the providers would not be precluded from having those additional abilities under the terms of service. So, Graham, Steve, this is what staff did with the document after last week's call, and here we go.
This is Graham. Thank you, Mary. That is a excuse me, a lot of work, and well appreciated. I think that adds a fair amount of clarity there. Kathy, I see your hand is up.
Sure, although I'm not, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Graham? And I'm sorry you're not feeling well.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
So what Mary has presented is a lot of material, and I certainly don't have my hands around all of it. It is a lot of work, which I appreciate. So my, as she suggested, I posted something recently that when it came to the first bullet point and section in Roman numeral 2, regarding further provider actions when there is a repeated failure of electronic communications. I was reading that, and it got to the point where second sentence of the first bullet, a requester will be promptly notified of a persistent failure of delivery, and there's a footnote. I expected that footnote to be a definition of the persistent failure of delivery, and instead it's a note about something very, very important, differentiating the failure of a technical delivery from the failure of a response, of you know, the choice of someone perhaps not to respond. So I think footnote 3 is very important, but I'd still love to see that definition, even a broad definition of what we mean by persistent failure of delivery, because if we don't define it, someone else will. Thanks.
Fair enough. Do you want to... Oh, that wasn't knee coughing. Hooray. Do you have a sense for you, Kathy, what a persistent failure would mean?
I thought I would leave it to the technical experts of the community. But I think it means, and I know we don't want to quantify into bounce backs because we've been talking about different types of systems. The answer is I don't know, but it's a good question. Thanks, Graham.
Thanks, Kathy. Are we talking, I guess, about, just to put this out there, a number of failed within a certain time period would seem the way to approach that, and I guess we need to figure out the failures in the time period. Steve, you have a clear answer to this question.
I do. I'm very comfortable leaving that question to be resolved in implementation by the technical experts, since we've debated that issue, I would say, excessively in this group. I think footnote 3 is important because it helps to dispel one misconception that also keeps arising. So I think that helps to clarify what we're not talking about. And I'm certainly comfortable leaving that for implementation. I wonder what the argument would be against that, since we seem not to be capable of mustering the technical expertise to come to an agreed definition, or even for someone to put forward a definition that meets technical muster.
Thank you, Steve.
I see
someone's mic is
on.
You're getting a lot of echo there. Michele?
Thanks, Graham. Michele, for the record, just in relation to Steve's comment, that's assuming that the implementation is handled by a completely different set of people. Based on my own personal experience, that is often not the case. It's usually a combination of ICANN staff with members of the working group, so I'd be wary about just punting something along to implementation. Right?
Thanks, Michele. If we don't want to punt it, though, then we need to probably come up with something. So do you have something in mind? Do you have a strong man to start us with?
Graham, it's Michele. I mean, I would just say, If you want to put some filler text in for now, to say 5 days or 7 days or something like that, there's probably an average number of days that a mail server will retry for sending stuff, after which it will fail I can't remember off the top of my head what the RFCs or anything say on that. It's just my main thing is just being, if just simply saying, okay, we can't deal with this, let's shove it along to implementation, is something to just be quite careful of, because based on my own experience, it's often the same to people, so it's not actually solving anything. Thanks.
Thanks, Michaela. Actually, Christina is making a suggestion there that seems quite reasonable, actually, that we could flag this as a point for which we specifically seek community input when we put out a report for public comment. And if we are stuck on this particular topic, then that seems like a reasonable choice to me. I noticed Don is in. Don, are you back on the line? I'm not hearing anything, so I'm going to say no. So I'm not hearing, so I'm hearing from Steve that he thinks we should leave this to implementation. I'm hearing from Michele that implementation seems to be the same people often, and that pushing that along may not be helpful, and then Christina was suggesting that we seek community input specifically on this. I think there seems to be some agreement that Christina's suggestion is reasonable, and we can try and move forward with that. I see Kathy's got her hand up.
Hi, Graham. In the chat room, we're trying to play with some definitions, and perhaps it might be worth creating a footnote where we attempt an explanation and then put that out for public comment. So could a persistent failure of delivery be a technical failure of delivery over a period of time after which the system stops trying to deliver the message, and then adding what James said, and the provider becomes aware that the delivery has failed or has been abandoned due to excessive attempts? So if you combine my chat room and James's chat room, we may have at least something we can throw out there for comment.
I love it. That's great. Yeah, let's try and capture that, put that in there as a as a footnote, and we can try and move forward with that and see what the community thinks. But I think a pretty reasonable approach. I think that's an old hand, Kathy. I'm going to assume so. Okay. All right, so that's more or less that first bullet point on the second page, I think, which brings us back to the second bullet point, which we were going to start at, and now we've sort of come back to that place, which is good. And this is where we get into the should and must, which we should really make it decision on. And this is where we should, or a provider should, or a provider must forward a further form of notice to its customer, and the provider has the discretion to select the appropriate means of forwarding such a request. Steve, I'll come to you in a moment. I guess I want to make sure that first of all, there in all cases, a provider is going to have an alternate method, as opposed to the email address that's captured upon registration. And then how we feel about the should or must. So let's go to you first, Steve.
Yeah, I had two comments on this paragraph, neither of which was directly related to what you were asking. So if you would like me to defer and see if there are comments on your questions, I'd be glad to.
I see Don's hand, but let's feel free. Go ahead, please.
I should go ahead?
Yes, please.
Steve. My two comments. My first comment has to do with the last sentence, which is new, although it was discussed last week. And I think this is fine in principle. I would suggest that we just say the provider can impose reasonable limits on sending communications through alternative means at the request of the same requester in relation to the same domain name. I don't know those. Once a year, twice a year, I don't know what the right number is, but I think we should just make it clear that the provider can impose some reasonable limits. My second point is on the preceding sentence, where we obviously have a disagreement, and I don't think it's likely that either side will persuade the other. We've debated it at least three or four times, and that's over who bears the cost. So I'm comfortable providing both alternatives and seeking public comment on that as one option. If we cannot persuade the group that in this situation the system has broken down, the bargain, if you will, that underlies legitimate privacy proxy services, which is that there is some way to contact the registrant in a case of need, that's broken down, and therefore not fair to impose that cost on a third party. If we don't have agreement on that, then I would be comfortable leaving the two options in there and asking for public comment on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I think I saw James in the chat agreeing with you that reasonable limits on repeated duplicate requests was his language, that we don't necessarily need to specify a time frame, and we can just leave that open, and I think there was some agreement on that. My sense is I tend to agree. Onto your second point, on the fee collection, we have discussed this back and forth quite a bit, and we haven't as yet come to a clear place. I'll go to James, please.
Thanks, Graham. James speaking for the transcript. And I agree with Steve that we have not reached any agreement on this, and so we should probably put both versions out as straw men for public input. I just feel like this issue, as well as some of the things we're seeing in transliteration, transcription, as well as some of the concerns around the follow-up work from the EWG, is that there's an economic question that's not being asked relative to all of this who is work, which is that who's paying for all of this. And, I think that this is just a symptom of a much larger question that that probably should be a conversation that should be had, through our public comment period and just generally throughout the community. So I agree with Steve. Let's put them out there and identify or highlight those in our call for public comment as specific areas that we're targeting for community input. Thanks.
Thank you, James. Anyone else have thoughts on this particular issue about whether we leave that for the fee for public comment? See if we can gather some input from the community. Cool. I wonder how many things we can put out there for specific public comment, but I don't think we're at too many just yet, so that's okay. And then the last bullet point, so we still haven't touched on the should must there.
Graham?
Yes. Hello, Don.
Finally.
Hey, bienvenue and welcome. So I'm not sure how long you've been on for, but we had Mary summarize the changes that she's made through this document, which were extensive, and I'll thank her again. We've done a little bit of discussion around what a persistent failure means and whether we should define that ourselves or ask for community input, and we've taken a gentle crack at actually defining that, but it is mm-hmm. something we'll draw the community input towards. We also looked at reasonable limits, and there is some agreement on that. And we're just coming back around to the should, must is about where
right.
we are.
Yeah. I tracked down my portable router. Took a while to, going 3 floors isn't the easiest thing for me to do. By the time I got it rigged up, and then I could hear, but then I don't know what was going on with the mic, so it took longer to talk. But I did hear a bit of the persistent failure discussion, and then everything after that.
Great. So I'm happy to hand back to you, as I'm also desperate to blow my nose now.
Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. All yours, Doc. Thank you.
Okay. We have had the should, must, lingering in a couple of places for a few weeks now. So I would like to try to get some thoughts on how we should go to get that resolved. Not lay 3 consecutive items over for explicit request for public comment. And I'm getting an echo on myself. Okay, it went away. I guess somebody turned something off. Steve?
Yeah, I think this is pretty simple. If we're trying to set minimum standards, and if we're trying to set a standard in this area, then it should be must. If people aren't comfortable setting a standard in this area, then we've had several weeks of conversation for no purpose. Thank you.
We lose you there, Don?
Nope. Well, you did for a second, but I found the problem. I got Steve's comment there. Kathy?
I think we should, not that I want to put everything up for public comment, but I think we've been around and around on this. I think we should put this one out for public comment because the implications of must, as we've talked about, there could be innumerable unintended consequences of that. We're setting minimum standards. Let's watch and see what happens. And my sense was should be part of those minimum standards. Must, again, tons of unintended consequences there. Thanks.
Okay.
I'm thinking diapers.
Michaeli? Thinking what?
Thanks, Don. Michaeli, for the record. What? Yes?
Okay. No, there was a brutal echo there, so I just wanted to... Go ahead.
Michaeli, for the record, just echoing what Kathy was saying, I think this is something maybe we should just look at for several of these outstanding issues where we can't reach agreement within the group, put those out for public input and comment in whatever the initial public comment period is, and then based on the feedback we get, then maybe we'll have a clearer path forward. Thank you.
Okay, Steve, is that new or old?
That's old. I've commented in the chat.
Oh, okay.
I think if we're serious about minimum standards, this conversation is somewhat surreal. It just makes me question the commitment to try to reach minimum standards here, but I'll leave.
Well, I'd like to focus on that for a minute. And maybe go and I guess go back to the people who are suggesting we first ask if there's anybody who agrees with the statement, and then second ask what the problems are with Steve's comment. Are we doing minimum standards, and at what point do we just have to say these are the minimum standards and you must do them? Might be an idea to get an idea of what these unintended. And I know this is a bit of an oxymoron. You don't know it's unintended until you run into it. But some thoughts on what theories on what that might even be, Susan.
Well, obviously, I agree with Steve that it should be must, and I think should just gives us the status quo as we have today. The good. Proxy providers are going to, the responsible ones are going to actually forward something or provide some sort of access and communication, and those who aren't going to. So, you know, I think all of this work that we've done on this is for naught if we don't include must. Should isn't going to get us anywhere. We're not going to move the ball forward. We maybe we've sat and done this for quite a long time, and we'll get no result out of this, which would be a shame, in my opinion.
Appreciate it, Susan. Any other comments at this point? I'll be very honest. I'm uncomfortable with punting three issues in a row. You know, at some point when we start to look a little foolish, or that's not the right word, but we're going through this section and just saying defer, defer, defer. It would be helpful to get some specifics on why should is, must is problematic on the unintended issue.
Hi, Don. It's David Hughes. I'm on a cell phone, so I cannot raise my hand. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Okay. So, I mean, the crux of it is, if there are going to be bad actors, should is meaningless. I'm sorry. Should is meaningless. It has to be must. And if you're a good actor, you're going to probably do the right thing whether or not we even agree upon it. So if we're going to, I think what we have to do is we have to figure out what is the minimum thing that we can agree is a must. I think that is the work that is before this group. And if we can't agree to something, that's one thing. But agreeing to something that is only a should seems to me, at least from my side, not really going to help me, because in many cases, the actions will be, I don't want to say malicious, but purposeful. And unless there is some kind of must, they'll be ignored by the bad actors. And that's who we're worried about. That's my two cents. Thank you.
No. Thanks for cutting in there. Okay, well, I don't see any other hands raised. Let's work this out in the drafting stage a little more. I think that's all we... Graham, did we cover the cost issue? 'Cause I've...
Steve brought it up briefly. We didn't dig too much into it again. That was one that we talked about putting up for public comment again, or drawing attention to.
Right. Okay. Okay, why don't we move on to G? Maybe we can reach solid conclusions on the final one here.
And Don and everyone, this is Mary again. I apologize that I'm still having an internet outage that prevents me from being in Adobe. So I'm going to ask Natalie, if she hasn't done already, to share the document for G that's from last week or the week before.
Yeah, it's nice to know I wasn't the only one having outage issues.
Yes, I felt slightly comforted too, but I do apologize to everyone for the delay in getting the document up. And
It's flipped over. Well, we're in between right now. Okay. Well, we got the potential recommendations listed here. I'm getting the echo again.
Don, if it will help us. Now, I was just going to ask if you want me to walk everyone through the document if they haven't seen it for a while, because as you said, there's some potential recommendations at the bottom of page 2, and there's also obviously a number of outstanding discussion questions as well.
Mary? You kind of dropped out there.
Oh, I was just offering to walk briefly through the document if you thought that would be helpful.
I'm sorry, my speakers went out. You're back on.
Don, this is Steve. Mary was just offering to walk through this Category G document if we thought it would be helpful.
Right.
Which I think it would.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said in my note to the chairs, I'm kind of jury-rigging here, so audio died, but I figured out the problem. Yeah, if you could, Mary, that'd be helpful.
Sure, and I'll try and keep it brief. In this document, and it's not phrased in the same way as of yet with the other preliminary recommendations, but it is divided into two, you know, general sections. One is about termination of the provider itself and its de-accreditation, and that's page 1 into page 2. Page 2 then has a brief section on the termination of the service to the customer, which I think we agree at the outset is a different topic. If we look at the termination and de-accreditation of the proxy or privacy provider, you know, the text starts off by highlighting some of the things that the working group may need to identify, including potentially specific issues that arise in the privacy proxy context that are not currently covered by the IRTP. And while it's not within our scope to recommend changes to the IRTP as a policy, we can identify those issues to be looked at when that policy is reviewed again. We talked a little bit about transfer issues, and there's a couple of questions here that we may not be able to get into today, but on the potential recommendations, the bullet points at the bottom of page 1, these were based on suggestions, discussions from the Category G discussions that this group had some weeks ago, and we've bolded the ones that look like recommendations, and there's a couple of, you know, smallish or specific points that may still need further clarification. For example, in bullet point 1, the potential recommendation would be all right, we probably want to notify the privacy proxy customer before it's provided via credited, but at what point should this occur? And a suggestion was made there. And the other bullet points are pretty self-explanatory, and again, we've put them there as potential recommendations, so it may be helpful for the group to look briefly at these potential recommendations, see if you agree with some or all of them, so that we can rephrase them into more affirmative recommendation language like we've done for some of the other sections. And before you go through that, in the second section on termination of the customer service, there's points here that we've put down for discussion. And I think one of the questions at the bottom here is whether or not what we have right now in terms of our current recommendations on what providers should put regarding publication and notification in terms of service, whether they're sufficient or whether more needs to be done, and whether an escrow model would be helpful. So, Don, Graham, Steve, my suggestion is to have the group look at the potential recommendations at the bottom of page one, see if any needs to be taken out or added to, and then maybe proceed to the discussion of the last two bullet points at the end of page two.
Yeah, I agree. I appreciate the background there. Helps bring everybody up to date. The document does a good job of kind of focusing in. Well, there's a nice heading there. It says potential recommendations. So it draws us right down. Again, I don't think we'll be able to get through everything, but why don't we focus in? I'm going to assume that there's agreement that the privacy proxy customer needs to be notified. At what point should this occur? An obvious answer is after termination, but is there some obligation to alert a customer even when the compliance process is in operation? Because there isn't, at least so far, we don't have any kind of automated mechanism for transferring. And there is, I think Mary suggested, there are reasons that the registrar process might not work in a proxy privacy setting. So let me ask for comments on how we want to, not so much if it should happen, but when customers need to be notified, or when we need to recommend that compliance do some kind of notification. I'm trying to follow the chat here. So do we just go with saying the customer has to be notified when the privacy proxy, after the privacy proxy provider has been terminated? Okay. Well, put a placeholder there. This is an area of notifying the rest of the privacy proxy community. I have to wonder whether that couldn't follow the usual patterns we see with registrar deaccreditation. Although, so. let me ask, and I don't have experience in this, is this, in the registrar's situation, does compliance, whoever does it, reach out to the registrar community before termination? Or after the decision's been made to do it? McKelly?
Registrar termination, the registrar termination doesn't happen overnight to start with. First off, there'd be usually a process involved there. When, as part of the registrar termination process, the registrar that is being terminated may elect another registrar to whom the domains may be transferred. Failing that, it then goes out to the broader group of registrars, and once a registrar has been selected by ICANN, then that is announced, if that helps clarify things.
Yeah, it does. I appreciate that. Is that general process, as Michaelis explained it, going to be sufficient in a proxy privacy situation? Do proxy privacy customers need a little more latitude when it comes to having their need to have a little more choice in terms of what where their proxy privacy registrations go? Is that a new hand, McKelly?
Yes, just very briefly. I mean, I would say, if we could, why don't we just use the process for for deaccreditation of registrars as the straw man, and just see if people raise significant issues with it. I mean, there might be something that we're not seeing, but just as an initial starting point, you know, this is what's done here. Is that enough? And just leave it at that. I don't think there's any point trying to belabor it, because we've discussed this several times in the past. A couple of points have been raised, but we keep kind of circling back to the same thing. So I think we pretty much covered us. Thank you.
Don, are you there?
Sorry, the speaker kicked out again. Am I back?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Not the speaker, the mic kicked out again. I think what McKelly just said does make sense. And we have discussed it since we're wrapping up G. I was just wanting to throw it out again. Along the lines of what McKelly just said, I think we could just go with the standard registrar process concerning notification also. I'd like to suggest that anyway. Okay, can we go to page 2 here, Natalie? Well, again, all of these issues here are things that we have discussed before. So since we have 6 minutes, okay, Kathy, which one specifically?
Hi, Don. Let me raise one. Hold it. Let me get in the background. Customer to be able to choose its own proxy privacy provider. I know this is something we've talked about, but it's certainly not something we can do today. I have the option of using the proxy private, unless we're going out to regulate attorneys and web designers and people like that, which maybe we are. Right now, when I register a domain name, I use the proxy privacy provider provided by my registrar. Are we changing that?
Okay, but you wrote in the chat that there are new issues that we flagged here. To be honest,
yeah,
all of them sound familiar
to me. I just got called off the call for something. So that was one of them. No, I just think there's material here that needs to be thought about. So I'm just hoping we can reschedule this also for the next call in case there are issues that come up as we mull over this or people that join us who are currently out on vacation. I wouldn't normally do that, but I think this is a big one. Accreditation, deaccreditation is a big issue.
Okay. Any other comments on these? On these items? I don't remember discussing a general recommendation to examine the impact, but that's. I don't know if that's controversial.
John, this is Mary.
Yeah. Yes. I'm getting all sorts of beeps and whirs. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, Mary? Unless that was Mary, of course.
Yes, it was.
Okay. What were you going to say there?
I'm sorry, could nobody hear me?
No, we were getting what we're getting now.
I was just asking if the general recommendation is something the group wanted to make, because this just seemed like a logical question to ask the group given the discussions on transfer issues.
Okay. It makes sense on the surface. And again, I can't see a reason not to do that, but... particularly folks with more IRTP experience than I, and be curious if you had any problems with the idea. See, we've got 2 minutes here real quickly, and I'll get to Kathy, in a second. We're talking about a call next week. We can go ahead and schedule it. I think we may put out a doodle poll just to see who even is going to be on it, if folks were already on vacation at this point. But as of now, I think we would go ahead for people who want to participate. Kathy?
Yeah. So I like this bullet point, a general recommendation to examine the impact on proxy privacy customers during the next review of the IRTP. And I'd go further, specifically to facilitate the transfer of domain names that are covered by proxy privacy services between one proxy privacy service provider and another. I mean, pick your wording, but, you know, it seems like there's a sense of the group that people should be able to transfer their domain names and maintain their proxy privacy coverage. So I would, you know, specifically add that that's the goal, to expand the transfer to include proxy privacy. Thanks.
Okay. Quick question, just to... What is the RTP cycle for review? If anybody knows. Okay.
Sorry, this is Graham. Let me briefly address that. I think IRTPD is done, but part of the recommendations included in that was that we kick off an overarching look at transfers, and I think that place a year after the implementation of IRTPD, if I'm correct. So it's on the cards. It's just not immediate. Thanks.
And we'll just see how it fits in with this process finalizing. We have slid gone to 11 o'clock. I see the people are dropping already. So we'll talk to you all, I guess, next week who have not already... bagged it for the holidays, if you have. But we'll talk to you in January. Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, all. Thanks, Don. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Francesca. You may now stop the recordings. Have a good day.